How's it going? How you been?
Let's get started.
What's scrapping?
Yo, yo.
You are now tuned in to Aljo the Funk Master. Watch your grill, you'll get knocked out cold fast. And talking shit, now we talking facts. Where the mountain off the back, you in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow disease. Planet fuck a name and a fame, only legacy remains. Remember the name, Aljamain Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't safe.
Motherfucker.
To the weekly scraps
episode.
I do this every time now.
Right.
I think 112, something like that. But big week, fight week. Obviously, yeah. Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar. But before we get into that, because I know that was a ridiculous scrap in the finals. It was more one sided than anything, but it was still a fun fight for multiple reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick, just so everyone knows, I know I posted a picture with Marab and I, and people were wondering, so a couple comments saying, like, why'd he pull out of the fight and he's sparring with you? That makes no sense. I'm like, yes, it makes no sense, but guess what? He pulled out because he had
coronavirus.
COVID.
He had the vid. The vid.
And not only him, it pretty much ran through the entire team. I had it. Pumi had it. Steve Lee had it. Longo got it. It pretty much just ran through the entire team. Dylan, Charlie, everybody. But everyone got through it. No problems, no major complications with nobody. Nas had it as well.
Yep.
Shout out to him. Actually dealing with some personal issues. He lost his grandma recently. So condolences to him and his family. So for Marab, his fight was February 6th against a very tough Cody Stamen. And for him to just take the fight after not training for 2 weeks would just be
It would make
stupid.
No sense.
It's silly.
How are you going to accept a fight, train for a fight, can't even train? You know
yeah.
what I mean? So.
Yeah, so for anyone wondering, that's what it was. He didn't just pull out the fight because he just wants to pull out a fight and then he's just start working out with me. We don't do that. We don't do that around here.
Not around here.
Yeah, so we had a good training session, good sparring session. First time being back in New York and getting sparring work in with Marab last week.
That was fun to watch, man.
Yeah,
you guys were going back and forth. It's just like the old days.
The pace is always, it's so different. Going with Dilemmi, I felt like, I can go 5 rounds right now. And then going with Marab, I'm like, all right, good thing I got a couple more weeks left because I need it, you know? So I think that's why it's good to have a partner like that, because I think iron sharpens iron.
100%.
We're both in the top 10 for a reason. And I think just the recipe for success for both of us and having each other has been huge. Not just for each other, everyone in the team. You know, I think I help push the envelope for him and for everybody else. He does the same thing for him, for myself and for everybody else as well.
100%, man. Like, everybody needs a machine.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for it if you don't have one, man, because that guy, he elevates everybody's level, you
it's
know?
It's different. And when you see a guy like Marab actually want to push a fight back, which he never does, he fought through the flu when he fought Frankie's Signs in Fresno when I fought. But also in Fresno, he lost that fight, but he won that fight.
Yeah.
But that just goes to show you the testament of Marab and how tough he is, mentally sound. So for him to want to push it back, you know, he was definitely dealing with some issues, like headaches and things like that. Nothing too crazy, but
it just wasn't the right time to take a fight, you know, and not be able to train for it. You know, it's just not the right thing to do.
If I was training a whole fight camp and then I had 4 weeks left and then 2 of those weeks went to recovering from COVID, I might have to ask to push that back.
Right,
that's
pretty tough, man. That's tough.
That's the responsible thing to do, especially in your career. Every fight's important at this point, especially for him and myself. So I think he made the right call. And also, Weidman got it too.
Weidman got it, yeah.
Yeah, but like I said, everyone in the team got it. But now we're all good. So I had it in the beginning of my training camp to start the fight camp for Pedion, but I didn't pull out of the fight for undisclosed personal reasons, as you know he did. You know, throw a little shade his
way. Wink, wink.
Shank, shank.
Wink, wink.
So we had a good week, and I was talking about what we did Monday because I'm still a little beat up from that. I still feel sore because I sparred Thursday, but I felt great with Dilemmi because I took Wednesday off.
Yep.
And then I was still sore from Monday, but then Friday did Sarah's BJJ 9:30, and then after that, I was gonna wrestle with you guys, and then You guys, we had uneven numbers, and that was the perfect excuse for me to just be like, all right, I'm out.
This guy shows up in his wrestling shoes.
Ready.
Ready to go. All of a sudden, he sees an odd number of people. He's like, you know what? I'm going to go on the bike.
Yeah. So, yeah, I got on the bike, did 25 minutes. Nice and easy, man. Nothing too crazy. I felt like I was pretty beat up, especially going into Saturday sparring with Marab. I'm I wish I could have sparred with him Thursday instead of Saturday. After being all beat up. So, it was rough, but got through it. We had a good rounds, good pace, and I think we both are reaching new levels in our technique overall. So that was fun. You know, he got 100%. A couple takedowns, but I was able to get back up a couple times, and I couldn't even take him down. The other thing was like, do I force the takedowns with him?
Yeah,
get tired,
and then get a little tired,
and then have to deal with him for another couple rounds. I'm like, you know what? We'll just stand up.
I think that's the cool thing though about watching you guys spar is one day it's like, all right, one guy's doing this.
Yeah.
The next week, all right, the next guy's doing this. So you literally see the ironing, sharpening the iron. You know,
yeah,
awesome.
It's cool, man. It's fun to watch, especially rewatching the sparring rounds and things like that. I just think our team is so nice in that regard. We just have a good dynamic in that sense in terms of pushing each other. But other than that, we came back. I had a short notice thing to do with the UFC for Twitter on Discord. And I got to watch the fights with the fans and with Jens Pulver, which was pretty cool. OG.
The legend. UFC champ.
Lil Evil. And we talked shop, got to watch the fight. So let's get into it. Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar. First off, your thoughts on Max's... First, let's give some... let's start with Max. Because he was the star of the night.
He was the star. You gotta give him first licks, right? That guy, he's a freaking superhero right now. Like, that performance, he threw over 700 strikes. That's a Hall of Fame-level performance, man. Like,
He broke his own record, right?
Broke his own record.
Yeah.
For significant strikes in the round. So, I think it was round 4 when he was just going off on him. He broke that record. Man, the guy's just so freaking good. And everybody else at featherweight and in the UFC now is going to have to raise their level if they want to even look close to that, man. The guys just raised the standard for UFC fighters.
I'm just like, how many strikes did he just throw? Because I can't keep that pace. That's just insane.
Dude, and he wasn't getting tired. Even after the fight, he didn't seem too tired. Come on.
And he got style points. Yeah. And he got big freshman points. You know, that big is the freshman toughest freshman I know.
Toughest freshman in the world.
And I think Kattar will agree now, you know, and Max was right. He picked on the wrong freshman.
Yeah.
But overall, you know, a little fun banter, jazz with each other back and forth. And I thought it made for a little bit more excitement, put more on the line.
100%. 100%.
Max rose to the occasion. And we were saying this is probably the best Max Holloway we've ever seen in terms of complete performance.
Yeah. And it's kind of piggybacking off of how he looked in the Volkanovski fight, man. Like, I think when he came out, got some of those knockdowns, you almost saw that same Max, but now just even better. And I remember last podcast, we were talking about, you know, if Max just boxes with him, if Max, you know, doesn't throw some of the kicks. But, dude, he threw everything. He was throwing spinning back kicks. He was throwing, you know, a whole bunch of punches to the head, to the body.
That long jab.
That step-in leg kick that he kept just poking him with, man. Like, dude, he's a problem.
The part that gets me is when he's doing it and he's evading punches and he's talking to DC. And he's
I mean, come on. Like, what? That's the coolest thing I think I've seen anybody ever do in combat sports. Was just look at the commentator. It reminds me of like Floyd Mayweather. I think he did it a while ago. But somebody asked Floyd Mayweather in the middle of the fight, who do you think's going to win or whatever? And he goes, yeah, Tom Brady, I got the Patriots on Saturday. I'm like, oh, man, this guy is too cool.
Man, it was a great performance. And again, we talked about the kicks, the side kicks, stomping to the knee, the oblique kicks. Kattar landed 4 leg kicks early in the first round within the first 2 minutes of the fight. And I was like, if he can keep this pace, this could make some problems for Max. Then Max made some adjustments, start to return his own kicks and then getting out of the way of his kicks and then returning back to fire. And we were talking about his touch and go style is just very like volume. It overwhelms you. And he shoots so far from the outside. He had the shorter reach than Calvin Kattar.
By 3 inches,
but fought like the longer man, which makes no sense. And that's what makes it so impressive. He doesn't have the power. Well, at least he doesn't fight like that. He just relies on his variety and his cardio. And I think it shined through. And it showed why the best is blessed.
The best is 100% blessed.
The best is blessed, baby.
I mean, I was almost wrong because I was starting to lean towards Calvin Kattar. I'm not even gonna lie. I was like, dude, his right hand, he's got this and that. But dude, Max shut me up. He's the best boxer in the UFC.
Because I know Longo was, we talked about it, and he was like, yeah, I don't know, man. Kattar looks like maybe Max's best days are behind him. He might just be looking to collect a paycheck. And I'm not throwing Ray under the bus because these are things he would say on the podcast as well. But I was like, nah, man. I just think that fight with Volkanovski, he just got shorted, man. Like, he dropped him. He should have won the fight. He didn't get the nod, but he came back, picked up where he left off, like you said, and he showed why he's still one of the best guys, if not the greatest featherweight of all time.
100%,
look at what he's doing. Yeah. And what makes this more impressive with breaking the record, his own record, was he broke the record against Brian Ortega, a grappler.
Who's fighting for the belt.
Fighting for the belt. And then he does it against a striker who everyone said, this guy has the best boxing. Then Max comes out and just styles on him with
Boxing
who?
I mean,
boxing what? It doesn't get any better than
this. This man looked at DC, punched him in his face, almost broke his face with that. Then moved his head out of three punches and then said, I'm the best boxer in the UFC. I mean, who else does that?
Nobody. And I think the other thing, the icing on the cake, is that he hasn't been sparring.
Yeah.
And I think that says something, you know, for a guy who's got a lot of mileage in terms of sparring rounds, boxing, kickboxing fights, and I don't know about boxing, maybe kickboxing fights and MMA fights. He's been in the game for such a long time that he doesn't need to put his brain or body in that much trouble with the prep. I don't need to beat my body up to get to the fight anymore. I know what I need to do. I know how to stay sharp. I know how to fight already.
Yep.
I just got to make sure I'm in shape and I'm ready to go.
No, 100%, man. I think the saying goes, you want to upgrade the hardware without damaging the software. Yeah. You know what I mean? So at this point in his game, he's 29 years old, but fight years, he's much older than that.
Yeah.
So why do the damage to your body? You know, why even take the damage?
I agree. And the other thing I was saying is, like, you would think, they say the best way to get in shape for any sport is to play the sport.
Yeah.
So to get into fight shape, you gotta spar.
Which is fair.
Yeah, but you see this, it makes you wonder, you wanna look inside of Max Holloway's training camp to see what he's doing to get into shape like that, to have a ridiculous output like that. Because that is just unheard of, insane, and I think a lot of people are going to start looking at what he's doing and trying to figure out, I want to be like Max. What can I do to be like Max? I want to train the way he's training so that I can be like him one day.
I mean, look, like I said earlier, he set the new standard. I mean, he's, what, 145? There are flyweights. Mighty Mouse.
They ain't throwing that many punches.
Mighty Mouse isn't throwing that many punches in a fight, you know? And these are guys that are built for that level of fighting, right? So this guy really did just elevate and I think change the game with that performance. And we're going to start seeing, like you said, a lot more people try and take after Max. A lot of people try and maybe use some of the stuff he does in his fights and try and pick apart his style and see what he does so different. Because right now, man, the best is blessed. In my opinion, he's a champ.
He's
Volkanovski who? Like, you know what I mean? That's an interim title that's going to be on the line.
Volkanovski did make a good point. He said, Max ain't putting up those type of numbers when I'm standing in front of him. I was like, oh, we throwing shade.
No, that's fair. I'll give it to him.
I was like, okay, I like this. That makes me a lot more interested in seeing the trilogy, for sure.
Yeah.
But especially after a performance like that, because I was like, man, maybe Kattar can get it done against a guy like Volkanovski. But we get to see Ortega first, next in line, and then we go from there 100%. And keep that division moving. That's why I love. Once the division is moving again, which it is now, finally, it makes things a lot more clear. It makes you a lot more excited to see who's in top 5, top 10, and
now
so
we get
on,
to
so
see
far.
Everything play out, man. Like, who knows? What if Volkanovski doesn't even make it to that fight? Brian Ortega, he's a troubling grappler. He's a great fighter. Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll be seeing Brian Ortega Holloway too.
It could be.
Max breaks his own record again. Who knows?
Crazy. And the other thing we got to talk about, Kattar, I mean, the toughness of him just to be out there and endure that, especially in the fourth round. It looked like Max was going to get him out of there.
Yep.
And looked like Herb was ready to jump in a couple of times, and then he came back
and threw
some
one
elbows.
Of those.
Yeah, like, and I'm one Mississippi, two Mississippi. I'm going to back off a little Hey. But it was a good fight. He defended himself well as best as he can.
Yep.
And I think he saw that he was Max was slowing down a little bit after going so crazy on him in the end of that fourth round stretch. And I thought he thought maybe I could come back in the fifth round when he started bouncing. He looked a little bit more fresh. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, we might have a problem here. But then Max said, nah.
I think that's, I mean, look, I hate to go back to Holloway because we're complimenting Cater right now, but that just goes to how good Holloway is, man. He got tired, still came back, but nah, Cater hung in there. Cater, that's another Hall of Fame level, I guess, of heart, right? Yeah. Like, you can't teach that kind of heart and a guy, man. Cater, he's tough.
And it's not like Cater didn't land anything. He did land, but yeah. Max did a great job rolling with the punches and all that. Punching with him. Punch on punch.
Yep.
Trading or rolling. And it just seemed like his volume in comparison to Cater throwing 1, 2, maybe 3 strikes at a time, where Max was just like peppering nonstop. I think that was probably the difference. And then once it got to a point where it was a little bit too much, he was a little bit too far behind in the scorecards. And Max just ran off to the races with that.
But I'll tell you what, man. I am interested to see how Calvin Cater is going to bounce back from this. We already know he's a tough guy, right? We know he's tough going into this fight. We saw how tough he was after this fight. But I think a performance like that Max had is going to make Calvin Cater come even harder the next time around. So next guy he fights might be in some trouble.
Yeah.
You know?
Now we got the co-main event, Carlos Condit versus Matt Brown, the immortal versus the natural born killer. Now, I did not think this fight was going to go any... I got all my picks wrong except for Max Holloway.
That's hilarious.
All my picks were wrong. Yeah, I picked the Matt Brown thinking that he was going to run through Carlos Condit.
I picked Matt Brown too.
I just didn't think that Carlos really wanted to fight anymore. I felt like if anyone was there for a paycheck, it was him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's coming back like because he wants to do it, but he didn't seem like he had that hunger and desire in his fight efforts, like actually going out there with this one, man. That was vintage Carlos Condit.
Yeah.
Looked like he had the meme mug on his face. Yep, looked like he wanted to get there and get nasty and get gritty, and that's what I loved about it. And that made me like, okay, I had some new life and some new faith in him. I was like, yo, maybe he can beat some of these young guys again if he can bring that intensity that he did against Matt Brown.
Yeah, and honestly, I was feeling the same way, man. I thought, you know, Matt Brown at least was going to be better than Carlos Condit was at this stage of the game, but I think it was right before the fight. You can tell when Carlos Condit got in that ring and he's looking at Matt Brown and he's kind of yelling and he's getting very amped up. I was like, oh, this is a different Carlos Condit. He's actually coming to fight here. He's coming to scrap. So I thought immediately, like, all right, here we go again. I might be wrong, you know, but nah, Carlos Condit ended up proving me wrong, ended up doing, you know, pretty damn good work against Matt Brown.
Yeah. I know Brown was a little upset that it was a 30-27 and he thought he should have won the first round. The first round was really close. A lot of back and forth. I can see why Matt Brown thought he won that round, which you can give him the round, but from the rest of that going forward, it was pretty much Carlos Condit the whole way through.
Yeah, and I mean, look, at the end of the day, a loss is a loss.
Yeah. Right? Whether it's an inch or a mile.
Yeah.
Quarter mile.
Yeah, I wouldn't even care at that point. I'm just back in the gym trainer on Monday. Forget it. Yeah. Forget it.
Yeah, so that was a good one. And this other one for me was really cool to see. Jing Liang Lee versus Santiago Ponzinibbio. Did not think this fight was going to go this way. Another one I was wrong on. And not that I was counting out the leech, but I just thought Santiago was going to pick up where he left off. And the leech threw that two, came back with the three, caught him on the chin, and pretty much just followed up and put him out.
It's kind of tough to pick up from where you left off.
After 2 years.
Where you left off is 2 years ago, man, you know. And the leech, he lost to Neil Magny, but dude, I mean, that guy's been consistent. He's been fighting. Yeah. And you could tell that guy loves it and wants to be in there. I don't know if Ponzinibbio really looked like the same Ponzinibbio.
He looked a little, I don't want to say hesitant, but it was a very methodical round. Both guys taking their time, trying to feel each other out. And then eventually when it got going real quick.
Yeah, real quick.
Yeah,
real quick.
I was talking to Pulver, and then next thing you know, I looked over and the fight was over. I was like, this is crazy.
Wow, that's how it happened.
Crazy.
Dude, the leech is something, man. I can't wait to see what he's got next.
Heavy hitter. And this other one, the hype train of Joaquin Buckley, unfortunately comes to a close after running into a southpaw orthodox head kick he looked like he level changed because he was doing that a lot throughout the fight.
Yep.
Was looked like maybe he's gonna go to the body, and then as he did that, he kind of got stuck when he saw the kick and kind of froze. Looked like he closed his eyes and just got whacked with a baseball bat to the head.
No, that's tough, man. And I've been there. You know, maybe not in that same position, maybe not knocked out, but I've gone against, you know, longer strikers with, you know, long legs, man. I've sparred guys like you. Like it's tough because you want to move your head to avoid shots. And Joaquin Buckley showed some good head movement earlier in the round, but that's the thing about fighting those long guys. You just duck down a little too low. All of a sudden, that kick doesn't have to go up as high to hit you in the head.
He's also only 26 years old, so he's got some time to come back. You know, it's not the end of the world. DeCharco's 31, and the other guy that Buckley lost to in the UFC is Kevin Holland. So no shame in that.
The only thing though is, you know, there's only so many times you want to have that off button clicked. You know,
yeah. And that's twice now for him.
That's twice now.
At least in the UFC. So we don't know about training or anything like that. But, you know, it was a good fight. In terms of competitors, this one I also got wrong. I had Buckley winning and I was dead wrong. I was like, damn, I'm just terrible.
We had Buckley winning.
Yeah.
I remember that.
And the other thing, I think he's small for the weight class. He's barely cutting any weight for 185, kind of like Kevin Holland. But Kevin Holland has a much taller and longer frame. That's the difference where Buckley is only like, I think, what was it, 5'10"? Not, yeah, 5'10". It says 5'10". So him fighting those 85ers, DeCharco looked like he was towering over him.
5'10 is the average height for a lightweight.
6 feet. But he looked way bigger than that. So when he's level changing, he's crouching down, he looked even smaller. So I don't know. Maybe that's something they might consider. Because I think he can still maintain some of that power at welterweight. But we'll see what he does. The guy's a heavy hitter for sure.
I don't think it's the end of Joaquin Buckley. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
He's young. He's hungry. He looks like he does the right thing. So.
And most watch knockout highlight on the UFC social media channel, which is crazy.
Come on.
Crazy. The spinning back kick, just for clarity. Yeah. And speaking of heavy hitters, our guy Puna, I can't say his name right. Puna. Just call him Puna. Puna Soriano. Russell the D3.
Yep.
My D3 brother goes out there, comes back from his injury, maintains his O, and takes the O from Dusko and Nusa Aino. Finishes him. Starches him. Left hand from the depths of wherever you want to call it.
Wait, hold on. Can we talk about the head movement?
Yeah.
Real quick. At first I was like, all right.
Dusko was out there grooming.
I was like, okay, this man is looking like he's styling on the guy.
Yeah.
And then you saw inch by inch, Puna just
getting
got closer
and closer.
Closer and closer until eventually clipped him a couple more times, and that was it, that last one.
Yeah, that first left hand that dropped him, he literally looked like he flew backwards. Yep. Like his, what's the one, you know those memes that people make with the GIFs where it was an overring for Francis Ngannou and he gets hit with the uppercut. Anthony Johnson. It's the same guy, but Anthony Johnson versus Andy Ruiz.
Not Andy Ruiz.
The one that knocked out Anthony Joshua in the boxing match. Andy, no?
Yes, that was Ruiz.
So he knocked him out, and they showed that highlight, him, Anthony Joshua, his spirit leaving and packing his bag and going back to his, like, that joint, like that.
Oh, no, that's disrespectful.
Yeah. So that's what it looked like when he got hit. It looked like they did the animation of his body just leaving his body from the impact, because he just flew backwards.
Yeah.
As he gets back up, he gets followed up and gets clipped again. I'm like, damn, bro, that was bad.
That was dirty.
The guy hits hard, man, looks like. And, you know, he's kind of a, I hate this word because it just sounds weird. Goofy. It's kind of like he's a clown. He's a comedian. This guy's a funny guy.
You couldn't picture him knocking somebody out like that.
Yeah, because he's just so funny. He's such a nice guy. We see him at the gym all the time at Extreme Couture, and then you see this guy comes out, turns out the Superman, and then just starches guys.
Starches guys, man.
He's a finisher.
That's a heavy hitter for sure, man. People keep bringing this guy up to me because our names kind of sound so similar. Pumi and Puna, right? That guy is... So I've heard about him before. That guy's tough, man. He hits hard. That's a Mack truck coming at you.
He finished seven guys of the eight. Finished. With punches and I think one rear naked choke. That's it for this card, because we didn't actually get to watch the entire card because we were coming back from training, so we had to rush back.
Yeah.
The next card, is actually this week. My guy Mike Chiesa taking on Neil Magny. There's a couple of matchups on here that intrigue me. We're not gonna go too crazy in depth with these guys, but this one's good. I gotta give my man Chiesa a shout, especially for him after me getting the win over Corey Sandhagen. He made sure he gave me some blessings and let them know like I should be the next guy to fight for the belt, kind of thing. And I appreciate that because he didn't have to do that. I didn't ask him to do anything like that, and he didn't have to do that. And he went out of his way to do that. And for a fight like this, this is a huge pivotal matchup for him to really excel his name into that upper top 10 of this welterweight division and really show that Mike Chiesa has arrived and he's no longer a lightweight. Trust me, he's no longer a lightweight.
He's definitely huge. no longer a lightweight. Huge guy.
You've seen him in Vegas, right?
Not in Vegas, but I saw him when he was at our gym.
Yeah.
He came to our gym a couple of times. I seen him at Sarah's. I don't know how that dude made 55. Yeah. That's a big boy.
If you had seen him in Vegas, that was the first thing I said. I said, how did you ever make 55? Because he actually filled out. He's got muscle bigger now. I'm like, bro, there's no way in hell. If I didn't know you, I would never believe you could have ever made 155 ever. Like, you used to fight at 155. When? Where?
Yeah.
Like, how many years ago?
Nah, that fight's going to be interesting, man, because Chiesa is big, he's strong, you know, but and a crafty grappler, but Neil Magny's also a crafty grappler himself. So.
33 years old, 6'1", 75 and a half inch reach, three fight win streak
for the man.
RDA, Rafael Dos Anjos, Diego Sanchez, and Carlos Condit, Condit.
Anybody who beats Rafael Dos Anjos, in my opinion, you're tough.
Yeah, and then Magny's got an 80 inch reach. And he's 6'3". He's also 33 years old. Dude, and he's also on a three-fight win streak.
Where are they making all these tall fighters from, man?
I don't know.
Like, something that I just didn't get, man. Like, come on. Let me get some of that.
He beat Robbie Lawler, Anthony Rocco Martin, and Jing Liang Lee by decision for Neil Magny. So this is a tough matchup.
Yeah.
I could see Chiesa pushing the underhooks and looking to get him on the ground. That's where he tends to shine. His striking is okay. He's not the most polished, but it gets the job done. Magny, cardio machine.
Yep.
I think Chiesa's got to get up on the scorecards early because 100%. Magny tends to thrive in the later rounds. So that's the one thing. I just hope he's in shape for that to go the distance, just in case. Because if you're fighting Neil Magny, most likely the fight's going to go the distance unless you're going to get him out of there.
100%. And Neil Magny's tough, man. He's a tough guy to put away, tough guy to finish. So I wouldn't go into a fight expecting you're just going to put that guy away.
Yeah. Other fights on this card of notoriety. Shout out to Roxanne Modafari. We got Tyson Nam taking on Matt Schnell.
That's a big fight, man.
Big matchup for the flyweight division. Matt Schnell hasn't fought in a while, right? He's coming off of a loss to Pantoja. Yep. That was 2019 in December. So about a year off.
Got a good striker versus grappler matchup here.
Which one is the grappler? Danger?
I'd say Matt Schnell.
More of the grappler.
Yeah, and more of the grappler.
Yeah, and Tyson Nam's 37 years old, you know, so he's not getting any younger. Finally got to the UFC.
But that guy packs power, man. You saw him against Aru, even in his last fight, man. He packs a punch. He's a big flyweight.
Oh, yeah, he fought that guy, Jerome Rivera. Finished him with the cross.
Yep.
Into the punches. And finished Aru. But before he got to UFC, dropped two fights in a row to Sergio Pettis in his debut decision. Lost to Kai Kata France by decision. Then finished Aru and then finished Rivera. So two and two.
But I mean, those first two losses were against two of the guys in the upper echelon, you know, the division. So
it's like Michael Chandler, welcome to the UFC. Here, you're fighting Dan Hooker. Here, you're fighting for the title.
Imagine.
It's crazy.
That's tough.
It's like you don't get to feel out the UFC jitters or any of that. You're just into the deep end right away. I remember training with him down in Hawaii. I don't think he was very fond of me at first because I know Ricky Simone, Marab.
Yeah,
and
I talked some
shit. And obviously, we're in the same weight class. Well, me and Ricky Simone. And I know that's like his best friend or cousin or something like that. So it's a little weird, but his coach, Charles Kipperly, made sure we sparred. And he's like, Kaisan, you're sparring Aljo. And I was like, oh, all right, I can't say no. He's like, yeah, I make him spar you. I make him spar you. I was like, fuck. All right. So I wasn't sure what he was gonna do, but he was. It was nice. And then a couple times, like, you know, a couple heat, a couple
right
heaters.
Hand rail. Like, okay. Threw some behind that one.
Okay. Had to get on my Holloway real quick, you know. But yeah, cool dude. Other than that, you know, another guy, Lerone Murphy, taking on Douglas Andrade, who's back at flyweight. Amari Akhmedov taking on Tyson Breeze.
Oh, Giroux is on that card too.
Giroux's on this card. Ricky Simone's fighting some guy. I don't know who the hell that is. Gaetano Pirello. He's 15-5. I think this is his UFC debut. Yes, it is. Giroux's fighting Sue Majeri. Daucha champion is fighting Daucha. Marcus Perez.
Ooh,
this should be interesting.
I love a Daucha champion fight. I love a Daucha champion fight.
Daucha champion. Mike Davis, he's tough.
Yeah.
He's got some real slick hands, fast hands, crisp boxing. Mm-hmm. He beat the crap out of that one guy in Tampa when we were all like, why aren't they stopping this fight? And Thomas Gifford. And Mark Montoya got a lot of flack for that. Yeah.
Yep.
Dude, he fought Gilbert Burns. That's just crazy. But Gilbert Burns was at 155 also.
Yeah.
And now he's just full on 175.
155 Gilbert is a completely different person.
Yeah. He lost to Dan Hooker.
He did lose to Dan Hooker.
It says something. You know, sometimes cutting weight could be just detrimental to your overall skill set and health. And this guy, I've been waiting for this guy to fight Umar Nurmagomedov, taking on Sergey Morozov. I don't know where he's from. So we got Dagestan. It says Russia, but I'm pretty sure he's from Dagestan, no?
Dagestan, Russia,
yeah. So, yeah, this is his first one. Oh, he fought Saidmar Honorio, who I fought as well. And my second title fight at Cage Fury, finishing with the rear naked choke.
Really? Strangle got him.
And Sergey, where is he from? This looks like Kazakhstan. Yeah, I recognize the flag. See, I only know these flags.
No, that was good.
That's the only reason I know these flags. So I'm learning a lot more from these guys. He's 31 years old. And this is also his UFC debut. Fought a lot at M1 Global. M1 Challenge.
M1, yeah. Another Russian promotion.
Yeah, so that should be good. Definitely looking forward to that. Now, UFC 257, the moment we've all been waiting for. Conor McGregor taking on Dustin Poirier, the rematch in years of a making. Finally, it's happening with the co-main event. Michael Chandler making his UFC debut, coming over from Bellator, taking on the always tough Dan the Hangman Hooker, all the way from New Zealand. Cannot wait for this weekend.
MMA gods for this fight.
We've been spoiled three fights in one week. That's
you
insane.
Truly blessed us this time around.
Right?
Oh, man.
After a long delay. You guys starved us, and now this is what you give us.
Yep,
it's about to get crazy. So main event right away: Dustin Poirier taking on McGregor. I think it was 6 years in the making. Poirier, 31 years old. McGregor, he is 32, so he's still relatively young.
Still relatively young. Yep.
But filthy rich, baby.
Y'all know, 60 days. Rich. Yeah.
Last win, Donald Cerrone, and before that he lost to Khabib, and before that he won the unified the belts. Well, not unified the belts. He won a second belt over Eddie Alvarez before beating Nate Diaz. Yeah, very, very long time ago. That was 2016, where he was a double champ. The double champ does everything. He fought for Khabib 2018 in October. For Cerrone last year, same time around this time of year, a year ago today.
Yeah.
So this is where we're at, man. You know what? There's something to be said for the time that he's had off. Could be positive, could be negative. And there's something to be said about all the wars that Dustin Poirier has been in.
I was just going to say, like, they're relatively close in age, but the past couple of years, one guy's taking significantly more damage to the brain than the other. But at the same time, one guy's been significantly more consistent than the other. So now I'm torn.
Yeah.
You know, I came into this fight thinking McGregor was just going to walk through him. But I watched the cold opening, and you know how those things hype you up and get you all ready for the fight. I don't know who's going to win anymore.
Yeah. I know before you were saying you just thought he was going to sleep him or something like that.
No. So I did say Conor was going to sleep Poirier. And I'm still leaning that way. If I'm going to make a pick, that would be my pick. But yeah. Dude, it's tough. It's tough. There's a lot of factors going into this fight.
Yeah. For me, I think you have to look at a couple of things. Poirier is a slower fighter to get started, and I think also the slower with the hand speed. Conor's a faster, sharper striker, I think, even though Poirier is sharp, but I think when Conor throws, he throws.
He's more punctual.
Yeah, and he's not just throwing strikes just to throw strikes. He's throwing knowing that he's going to land and connect. I think that's the difference in this, and I think that Poirier, if you look at his resume, Dan Hooker, war. Khabib, one-sided mauling. Max Holloway, war. Eddie Alvarez, war. Justin Gaethje, war. Anthony Pettis, that was a war.
War.
Eddie Alvarez, no contest, war. Even the Jim Miller fight, majority decision, that was a war.
And then,
Jim
and then before that, he got knocked out
by Michael Johnson.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's a lot that's been going on.
Bobby Green, Joe Duffy, all these fights were dog fights. And guess who said it the best? Masvidal. Jorge Masvidal, he said Dustin Poirier is just a dog.
Yeah.
And I think if he's doing the right thing and making sure his body is healing up, I think he enjoys being in those type of fights more than... I feel like he could have made a lot more of those fights a little bit easier.
100%. 100%.
But he decided to go the ketchup and spaghetti sauce all over my body and face route, you know? So something to be said about that as a fan. You're always going to watch. You're always going to tune in to see, like, how is this man still standing and how is this guy still hitting him and he's not exhausted from falling over from punches. But that's what it is for me. I think Conor edges him in those departments. He's fresher, but I think if Dustin could drag him into a dogfight and make Conor see his own ketchup and marinara sauce all 100%. Over his face, that I think that can see if Conor really, really has the desire and the heart to still want to be in there and fighting with the best guys in the world. Or is he just trying to get another Cowboy Cerrone fight, quick finish, get in and get out and just make money and bounce? And I think that's the difference. Dustin Poirier thrives in those type of fights. Conor McGregor kind of, when there's a little adversity, we've seen it with the Nate Diaz, even both times. I know he won the second one, but that guy got on his bike and was like, yo, I need to eat this
ran
clock
off as much on the plug twice.
So I think there's something to be said about that. But again, he's got to drag Conor into that type of fight. Conor's a little bit smarter than that. I think he's a little bit older, more mature. The first time those guys fought was... What was that?
2014.
September.
Wow.
Yeah. So both guys have grown leaps and bounds.
Yep.
Poirier coming back from that, losing to Michael Johnson, coming back from that, becoming interim champ, fighting Khabib, taking him down to the third round. It says a lot. He's going to be a legendary status when he's done.
He's also a Hall of Famer at this point. You know, when he retires, he'll definitely get in there. Who do you got?
If I had to pick, I'm leaning towards Conor. I think he's just going to be smarter about the position. If I see Poirier starting to wrestle him early, that changes my pick. Changes my pick 100%. If he can get Conor to fight, but I think Conor might be secure thinking that it's going to be a one-up, straight-up striking match.
Yep.
I think he's going to try to lull Poirier into that. I think Poirier might get caught up in the emotions of it again and trying to please the fans and the crowds, and hopefully he doesn't do that. And he mixes it up. If he mixes it up, Poirier should win. Overall, his skill set is better. But Conor did give Khabib some trouble with some takedowns. But you're talking about the best takedown artist in the game and one of the best strikers in the game in that division. There's got to be a little give and take there. So I can understand why Khabib might have had a little bit more difficulty getting the fight down to the ground compared to most other fights.
Yep.
Other than that, I think on paper, I would lean the overall average of the attributes to Dustin Poirier, where Conor is just like 100 in like the striking department and precision and power. Yeah. So in that department, he gets like those attributes where Poirier is like the grappling, the clinch, the toughness. He's got all of that in his favor.
He's a more well-rounded mixed martial artist, that's for sure.
But he has to use it if he wants to get his hand raised.
That's fair.
Or just get to another legendary fight just because you want to. Just because you want to.
I mean, honestly, look, if he gets in one of those legendary fights, those dog fights, look, I think he wins this fight.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I did like about a quote that I heard recently from him. He said he wants to see if Conor McGregor really wants
to
be
in
there. How bad he wants to be in there. That's big, man. Once you make your money, they say, you know, it's kind of tough when you've got those satin sheets, you know? So
it's easy to hit the snooze button when you're all rolled up in the satin sheets and the Egyptian cloth at night, you know?
100%. It really is, man. You see that with a lot of fighters, but...
So I sleep on a pullout couch. People are like, why? I'm like, listen, man, I got to remind myself of the hard times. Now I got a bed now.
You finally upgraded.
I got a mattress. Oh, man. Yeah, but this is a good fight, man. I'm super excited. I got to watch the cold open, and I got to watch the countdown. Yep. Got to finish checking that out.
I got to be honest with you. I'm going with Conor McGregor, too.
You going with Conor?
Going Conor. I think the damage Dustin Poirier's taken in every single one of these last 7 fights now, and on top of that, I didn't like his whole demeanor of how he accepted the fight the first time. He's like, oh yeah, Conor, you can pay for my flight, this and that, I'll just go take it or whatever. I didn't like that. Yeah. I didn't like that whole thing. If you're gonna fight, we're gonna fight, man. We're gonna scrap. Like, I don't.
Yeah, exhibition.
Don't pay for my flight, none of that. Like, what? I'm gonna fight you in the ring, you know? Yeah. Pay for that. So I think Conor McGregor is gonna win this fight. I think he's got that mental edge. He's taking a little bit too much damage, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, again, man, Dustin Poirier is a dog, but we're gonna find out if what approach he uses for this fight. And I'm interested to see what approach Conor uses. And again, now Conor's finally filled that 155er. I think he's put some time in and really let his body grow into it. So that could also be the difference with the speed. Maybe he's got a little bit more power too. Probably hits a little bit harder and cracking more at that weight class. So I'm very interested in seeing this. Both guys coming up from 45, filling out at 155 and making this division their home.
Now, my whole thing is this though. If Conor loses, are we going to say this wasn't a focused Conor again?
I mean, Dana said the real Conor is back.
Bro.
That's what Dana said.
All right.
And I'm going by that.
All right, I'll go by that.
And it's all I needed to hear.
I'll go by that.
It's like, this is the real Conor. Trust me, he's back. I'm like, all right, I don't want to hear my toe hurt. I don't want to hear my foot was a balloon. I don't want to hear none of this nonsense. You need to fight the man who's 3 times the size of me in there.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, since when was Nate Diaz 3 times the size of somebody in the ring?
Like, did you see this guy step on the scale? this should be a good one. And the other thing, there was something else that was very important. Damn, I can't remember now. Whatever. It'll come back to me. But damn, I don't want to skip over it because I feel like it was important.
It was important.
It was.
Obviously, it wasn't that important.
Don't. Damn. All right, whatever, man. Whatever, man. Poirier, McGregor. I'm trying to recap what I was going to say. I really don't even know what I was. I forgot.
Just say Poirier, McGregor until you get it again. Poirier, McGregor.
It's done. It's gone. Gone. Tip of the tongue is gone. Dan Hooker versus Michael Chandler. Big fight, big matchup.
Unbelievable. I cannot wait for this fight.
Another man who's also two guys who've been on a lot of wars. Yep. Dan Hooker and Michael Chandler. I mean, Benson Henderson. This guy's just out there scrapping. I mean, the Benson Henderson fight, this one wasn't that crazy compared to the others. But the Patricio Pitbull,
took some damage.
Took some damage in that. All the Eddie Alvarez fights, the Will Brooks fight. I still was so shocking that he lost to Will Brooks twice.
Yeah.
And Will Brooks came over to the UFC and didn't really... underperformed compared to what his skill set...
What his resume, you know, really showed earlier.
Yeah. Now, Dan Hooker, he's also 34 years old, Michael Chandler. Dan Hooker, 6 feet tall, 30 years old, 75 and a half inch reach, where Chandler is 34, like I said. He's 5'8", with a 69 inch reach.
You know what that means?
That's a big difference. It's going to be a lot of power packed into those punches.
A lot of power, but also Dan Hooker, man, that flying knee might come.
Oh!
That big knee Dan Hooker delivers, man, against those shorter fighters.
He knocked out like 3 guys in a row.
A couple guys. I remember seeing the Jim Miller one live, and that looks so devastating, man. That guy touches you on the chin. I think he hit Gilbert Melendez. Burns.
I think he caught him with the knee first.
I mean, if that guy hits you in the head with that knee, it's a problem.
Ross Pearson was a nasty one. And all of them were like, he was going backwards, just steps back and just lifts the knee and pretty much just boom. And the guys run right into it. He's got such a long frame. I don't know how he ever made 145.
Yeah.
He lost to Jason Knight at 145. He lost fights that he probably should never have lost or probably would have never lost had he been up at this weight class.
Natural weight class, yeah.
He's got such a big frame. I always wonder when guys do that, cut down like that guy, Sean Woodson. He's like 6'3", fighting at 145. I'm like, how? He lost to Julian Erosa in his UFC debut. In his UFC return on like 3 or 4 days notice, something crazy like that.
I mean, look, I can see where you think you get the benefit, right? You're going to have a bigger frame. You might be taller. You might have a little bit more reach. But, dude, you got to also have a proper body, right? Your body has to be in good shape. It has to, you have to feel good, you know, in order to fight good.
Especially your brain. Got to have some fluids up in there.
Need some fluid in that brain, man. Otherwise, you'll be in trouble.
Yeah. I don't really know what to think about this matchup, though, in terms of Michael Chandler. We don't know what we're going to get yet. The fight with Primus, which was really weird, where he rolled his ankle. Did he ever get the rematch with him? I don't think they... Oh, they did. Yes, he did.
No, yeah, he won.
He won a decision.
He won, yeah.
And Primus was undefeated at the time. He beat Sidney Outlaw. He lost to Patricio. Pitbull got knocked out in the first, in 1 minute, pretty much. That was a really weird one.
Yeah.
He knocked out Sidney Outlaw, who's from this, New York, who's now training down in Florida.
Yeah, yep.
And he beat Benson Henderson. So other than that, it's hard to say. It's hard to measure because... Benson Henderson, yeah, he's a former UFC champion, but
that was old Benson Henderson, man.
That was years ago.
It was years ago.
We're in a different era now.
100%. That's why I'm very interested to see how Michael Chandler is gonna come out against a guy like Dan Hooker. We know Dan Hooker should be the better striker, but when you add in those intangibles like wrestling into the mix, man, that it just makes that overhand right just a little less difficult to see. You know, it's gonna change the game a little bit. I'm interested.
But is Chandler really gonna wrestle? The Chandler we know is probably not going to go out there to wrestle. And on top of that, I think with Chandler, he's kind of reminds me of Justin Gaethje. He doesn't have a jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
It's just, if he does pass your guard, it's most likely a mule kick, and that's it. He's not looking to do anything else. He's not looking for triangle chokes. Yeah. Doesn't seem like he's really looking for head and arm chokes, even though I do think he has one on his record. But he does this, you know, it's more like those squeezers. Like, he just, arm triangle choke, he hit on Brandon Gritz. But he doesn't seem like a very seasoned jiu-jitsu guy, which is okay. You don't need to be a jiu-jitsu black belt in MMA, but you have to be competent enough where you end up in a position like a Justin Gaethje, where you know how to defend a choke like that, where a guy's mounting you.
Move in that position,
yeah. So in this situation, him taking down Hooker, I can see Hooker landing elbows off his back or just getting right back up.
Yeah.
So
if he does get one of those takedowns against Hooker, I think it might, you know, just be one of those takedowns for position, you know, almost like the ones where he got against Ben Henderson. He got that big suplex. It looked cool, looked great, but he didn't exactly do the most damage from there.
Yeah.
But that could be enough to mix it up.
Yes, 100%. And I do think with Dan Hooker being so much longer, him being in his guard of Hooker, it allows for a lot of leverage, especially with that reach advantage. Him throwing those punches from his back, he could just throw elbows and still reach him and have the same effect and probably be a lot more damaging in terms of, I said same effect, but in terms, it would have a lot more damage in terms of punching and could possibly cut him. So there's a lot of intangibles with this one we don't know yet because we haven't seen Chandler in there with some of the best guys in the world. That's what makes me excited about this. It's a co-main event to a huge fight. Khabib is basically saying, I'm going to come back based on how this co-main event and main event fight goes. And guys, if you like the podcast, don't forget to hit the subscribe and don't forget to hit the like button. Or else. But yeah, so I like this. Khabib is like pretty much saying, I'll come back for that 30 and 0, but you guys gotta show me something.
Yeah.
Show me.
That honestly is the coolest ish I've ever seen anybody say. The champ is saying, I'll fight again if you guys are good enough.
Yeah.
Like, come on, what?
It's like me and Smash Bros. I'm like, I know you guys want to play me in a 1v1, but I'm like, I'm just not going to do it because you guys got to show me something in the free fall. Like, show me you guys deserve the matchup.
I didn't know we came on this podcast to lie.
Dan Hooker, his last fight, Poirier, that was a war. Paul Felder, that was a war, split decision. Yep. The out fight, that was tough. I won't call that a war. He did his thing and it was pretty much Dan Hooker all the way. I think it might have been a 30-27. And the James Vick, he knocked out Vic Barbosa, that was a war, but he took a beat down. You know, I don't even know if I can even call that a war because it was one-sided in terms of Barbosa beating, putting the the beating on him, him yeah, being the hammer.
You know, that was one of those fights. His body gave up before I feel like he actually gave up.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think he's starting to, like, realize, I don't want to keep fighting in these type of fights all the time. And I think he actually openly said that. Like, his last fight with Poirier, he left himself, it was defensively poor in terms of what him and his team's been practicing. So, we can probably see him doing better in that regard. So, we're gonna find out about that. But, if I had to pick this one, I lean more towards the guy who's been there, who's proven against some of the best guys. And for me, that is Dan Hooker. And I love Chandler. I think Chandler is phenomenal. You see his stuff on IG, the workouts. He's insane. But this isn't those type of workouts. This is a fist fight against some of the best guys in the world. And, you know, prove me wrong. Prove the world wrong. And go out there and show why you are a former world champion for Bellator.
100%. I definitely see that pick. I think, man, it is tough to pick because both guys have been in great fights with great fighters. But I think, man, it's tough because Dan Hooker has been in hard wars with some of these great guys, but I think Michael Chandler does have that championship mentality. You know, he's been in those hard fourth and fifth round fights, you know, and been able to show that he has that what it takes to be a champion. If Michael Chandler can pull that out on Saturday, I think he wins. But I think the safe bet is Dan Hooker. So I'm going with Dan Hooker. He's been in there.
Yeah.
Like you said, with some of the best guys.
And three-round Dan Hooker is pretty damn good.
Yeah, three-round Dan Hooker is a beast. So that's also a big thing, too. This is three, not five rounds. So I think I'm leaning towards Dan Hooker, even though Michael Chandler has that championship spirit in him.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and the other thing I was going to say is I heard they're going to make co-main events now five rounds.
That's
what I've been hearing. And I'm like, well, me clamoring to fight as a co-main event has kind of changed now. But
at that point, you might as well just train five rounds, no matter what,
all
just
the time.
You're ready.
Like that's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work.
But we'll see. We're gonna find out this weekend, or maybe they'll post it or something like that. Probably it's probably up on the UFC's page. Well, I would say that it's 3-3.
I wouldn't mind if like it was one of those agreed things where if it's like, all right, we both agree for five rounds, let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, cool. If then you guys wanna put yourself through that,
then that's different. I mean, even like Dan Hooker, his fight with Dustin Poirier, the first three rounds, even if you say he lost the third, you could make the argument that he won rounds one and two.
Yeah.
And then he wins that fight.
100%.
You know, so and that's the difference between being a main event fighter, being in a championship fight. You got to be able to grit through in those championship rounds four and five.
Yeah.
And that's where we see who wants it more and who digs deeper.
Yeah.
And that kind of makes me want to go back on my pick from Conor to Dustin. And honestly, it just Dustin just got to fight smart. So, and same thing with Dan Hooker. I think, like you said, Michael Chandler, the championship rounds, he's tested in that regards.
Yeah.
But if he gets behind on those scorecards early, it could be an easy fight for not easy fight, but we could see Dan Hooker running away with it.
Yeah, 100%.
In a three-rounder.
100%.
This next one, Jessica Ai versus Joanne Calderwood. That's a big pivotal matchup for the females flyweight division. And then we got our guy, Matt Steamroller Favola. No longer Cream Roller. He's Steamroller.
Steamroller.
Steamrolling.
Steamroller.
Steamroller.
Choo choo.
He's taking on Otman Azatar from Morocco, who's 13-0. Favola's 8-1-1, looking to take away the hype of Otman. I'm looking forward to this fight. Otman's got a lot of hype behind him, knocking guys out. He's called the bulldozer for a reason. He's 5'8, 71 inch reach. And what was he, 13-0? I said, 13-0. He knocked out Kamaru Worthy in 1 minute 33 Kamaru seconds,
Worthy, yeah.
Which I thought was going to be a much tougher fight. He knocked out some other guy named Timu, I don't even know how to say that, before, and that was his UFC debut. So he's 2-0 in the UFC. Favola had some fun fights already, some classics with Lando Venata.
Phenomenal fight.
And Favola's 5'9", he's 30 years old, with a 71-inch reach as well. His last fight, split decision win over Luis Pena, tough dude.
Yep.
Jalen Turner, two tall giants that
he had
to fight back to back.
Tallest guys in the world.
I'm like, Matt, all right. I don't know if they like you. They keep giving these tall guys, like, kind of messed up. Let the tall guys fight each other.
Yeah, out of
shoot.
It.
He had a draw with Lando Venata in his debut. He lost to Paulo Reyes after getting an arm triangle finish on the Contender Series. So he is 2-1-1. Wow. So this is a big matchup for him. He wins this. He steals the show. We're pulling for him. Can't wait to watch this. We're going to be having the UFC watch party here. And nice. It's going to be lit. And we're going to be getting crazy. So, Steve Roller, we are with you. Can't wait to watch and cheer for you, my guy. And hopefully training is going well and the weight cut is going well, even though that always sucks. But it is what it is. Looking forward to this one.
Steve Roller.
Another good one. Armin Sharzukian taking on Nazrath. This guy fought, who is it? Ish Makachev.
Yes.
In his UFC debut and took him the distance, hitting some beautiful throws on him, which I did not see coming whatsoever. Juliana Pena taking on Sarah McMahon. Brad Tavares taking on Antonio Carlos Jr.
That's a big fight, man.
Against Shoeface?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a huge fight. Nick Lentz is back. I wasn't sure if they were going to give him Charles Oliveira again, but I'm glad they did it. he's fighting Evloev, 145. And Khalil Rountree is back fighting Carcino. I don't know who that is. It's Polish, though. So this is a good card, UFC 257. Super excited for this, man. Obviously, we tried to jam in as many of the fights as we could and obviously give you guys the recap.
Three cards we got in there.
Three cards. Super excited, man. This is going to be a good weekend. Again, MMA gods, thank you for doing this. Three fights in 1 week. Crazy. Super pumped up. Well, not 1 week, but like 8 days. So,
yeah.
This is going to be good. We're going to get ready to get some training in now. We got to get our work in because we're on the grind too, trying to be like these guys and have my face on a poster so I could be like Egghead and Cringe Man. you know, so thank you guys for always tuning in. And remember, if you like my shit, subscribe to my shit or spin it back, please, baby. Bow.
That's the show.
Peace.
You ain't gotta go home, but you gotta get to stepping. And remember, we bring the noise because the people want the funk. Until next time, this is the Weekly Scraps. Bye-bye.